A new McGill University study published on December 24, 2008 in the journal Neurology reports a relationship between people who suffer from a particular sleep disorder that causes them to kick or cry out during their sleep may be at greater risk of developing dementia or Parkinson's disease. This study was funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research and the Fonds de la Recherche en Santé du Québec, and I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Ronald Postuma, researcher in the neuroscience axis of the Research Institute of the McGill University Health Center, or MUHC. He is also a neurologist at the MUHC, assistant professor of neurology and neurosurgery in the Faculty of Medicine at McGill University, and researcher at Sacré-Cœur Hospital in Montreal. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to start off first for our listeners to have a basic understanding of what a normal sleep cycle constitutes. Can you sort of describe that for us?
Sure. So when you fall asleep, you go into a series of stages, and they're divided into REM stages and non-REM stages. And the non-REM stages are 1, 2, 3, and 4, and you basically progress through those. 1 is very light sleep, you feel drowsy. 2, you're really fully asleep. And 3 and 4 are what we call slow wave sleep, where you're very, very deeply asleep. After you go through that, you go into a cycle called REM sleep, which is kind of between wakefulness and sleep. If you look at your brain on a wave pattern, it almost looks like wakefulness. And this is the time that we're having the most intense or most vivid dreams. We might do several cycles of this per night, and then the REM cycle tends to predominate later on in the night, whereas the other phases are predominant earlier on.
Can you describe the sleep disorder that you were looking at and how prevalent it is in our population?
Sure. Well, it's a very unusual disorder, that's for sure. It was only described about 20 years ago. And the hallmark is that people feel that they're acting out their dreams at night. So if you dream that you're running, you'll make running motions. If you dream that you're fighting, you'll make punching motions. And if your wife is sleeping next to her, you may punch her. Usually when a person wakes from this, they're instantly normal, they're often apologetic, and they understand, oh no, I'm sorry, I was dreaming about something, I had no idea I was moving. There are a few other disorders that can sort of superficially look like this, but that aren't this. People can sleep talk and they're sleepwalking. That's not the same thing at all. This is something that happens in REM sleep and is very vivid, very dramatic. We think that it occurs in somewhere between 1 and 5% of the population. Severe problems, sleep-related injury, is maybe 1 in 200 people. But if you ask people just generally, do you have this problem, maybe up to 5% of them, or in other words, 1 in 20, will say that they have the problem.
Now, with regards to this particular sleep disorder and your research, what was the basic science that contributed to the development of the study? Where was the link? What were some of the clues that had you ask these questions and then develop the study to try and answer them?
Right. Well, Carlos Schenck at the University of Minnesota was the first person to describe this disorder, and 10 years later he published a very important report where 40% of his patients, there was only 29 of them and they were all men, 40% of his patients went on to develop something like Parkinson's disease, in most cases typical Parkinson's disease, in some cases Parkinson's disease with other features. And there was another study done a couple of years ago, again a little bit smaller with about 40 patients, describing a similar risk. So there was some suggestions already, and little doubt in fact, that there was some sort of increased risk of developing Parkinson's disease and another disorder called Lewy body dementia, which is like Alzheimer's disease, sort of a cross between Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. That about 40% of people in about 5 years are going to get these disorders.
What was your study design?
So what we did is we have a very, very large cohort at the Sacré-Cœur Hospital under the direction of Dr. Jacques Monplaisir, who's been doing this for years looking at these patients. And we have about 100 patients, and we were able to find 93 patients. And so what we did was we went through our records, and more importantly, we called patients in for a visit, for examination, did a whole bunch of things, seeing how they were doing, and then went backwards through time and tried to say what the risk was of developing these diseases if you have REM sleep behavior disorder.
What did you see?
Well, we found a risk that was a little bit lower than the other two groups had suggested, but there's no doubt that the risk is dramatically increased over the regular population. So what we found is that about 20% of people at 5 years developed the disease. 40% at 10 years and about 50% at 12 years. And that's as far as we could look. We would presume that that number will eventually go higher than 50%. About half of people had what we think is garden variety Parkinson's disease, and about half of people developed Lewy body dementia.
So there was a specific link. This is not a situation where in a group of people that may have developed the diseases anyway that had this sleep disorder just apart from that. This was specifically a link that was established between these two.
That's right. It's a direct link. So your risk of, you know, if you're, say, a 60-year-old man, which is the typical population, they seem to be men for reasons that we don't understand, your risk of getting Parkinson's disease over the next 10 years would be, you know, certainly much less than 1%. So anything, you know, close to 40% is clearly a dramatically increased difference.
So this begs the question what the pathophysiological mechanisms are even the hypotheses as to what contributes to these outcomes. What is it that's happening in the brain with regards to these sleep disorders that then leads to the mechanisms that result in those Lewy body dementia or Parkinson's disease?
One of the most important advances in Parkinson's disease in the last decade is a recognition that it can start outside of the motor areas that are involved. Now, Parkinson's disease typically presents in doctor's offices with tremor, always in association with slowness of movement and stiffness of movement, slow walking, in other words, motor signs. But pathological studies, so looking at brains under microscopes of people who die from all sorts of causes, we recognize that the changes of Parkinson's disease are in fact seen in other areas before the motor areas develop. And the areas that develop Parkinson's changes early are the areas that control smell, the areas that control autonomic function, so that's things like regulation of blood pressure and constipation and urinary problems, and then only slightly later on, the regulation of the areas that are involved in sleep and perhaps also in mood as well. So in other words, the degenerative process of Parkinson's disease, the aging process that's killing the neurons in Parkinson's disease, has started in these areas first, and so people can present with smell loss, with color vision loss even, with autonomic dysfunction, and with REM sleep behavior disorder years or decades before they develop the motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
So in other words, the neurodegenerative mechanism that is seen with this disease follows almost a continuum, but different areas of the brain being affected over that timeline. So you have a similar mechanism, but different expressions of the disease that may not be recognized for what they are, since the focus has always been, as you mentioned, when someone comes in with Parkinson's into your office, they are exhibiting the motor symptoms, which are much more observable than some of these other softer signs.
Exactly. So we know that, for instance, people who have a lot of constipation are at a slightly increased risk of getting Parkinson's disease 20, 30 years later. People with blood pressure regulation problems, people with depression, all are at increased risk of Parkinson's disease. So that's exactly what you said. These people are presenting with subtle signs, less dramatic, less obvious, but in fact, that's the first sign of their Parkinson's disease.
So now what are the potential clinical applications of this work with respect to, obviously, in practice, but as well the future research that stems from this?
Right. Well, first of all, most importantly, you know, not everyone with constipation is going to get Parkinson's
right.
disease. These are small risk increases. But with REM sleep behavior disorder, the risk increase is really quite dramatic. So what I personally think is that every patient who has REM sleep behavior disorder should be evaluated and followed by a neurologist. And the reason to do that is because although we can't prevent the progression of Parkinson's disease, we always recognize that people have been suffering sometimes for years with not only the motor signs, but also all the non-motor signs that are often treatable. And so I like to follow these patients, catch the problems early, and intervene early so that we can maintain their quality of life.
And with regards to research, what are your plans?
Well, we have a lot of plans. Perhaps the most important thing that we're doing at the Sacré-Cœur Hospital is we're trying to look at other predictors of Parkinson's disease, perhaps that we could screen for even in the general population. So things like smell loss, color vision loss, autonomic dysfunction, we can use the patients with REM sleep behavior disorder as models in a way to see if these other things are also predictors of Parkinson's disease. We hope that in the next couple of decades, we're going to have treatments that may stop the progression of Parkinson's disease, stop the neurons from dying. And if we have those treatments, it's going to be extremely important to identify the process of Parkinson's disease as early as possible. Something that you, if you identify it late, your quite effective treatment may do very little, but if you have affected, if you identify it very early, your treatment may in fact prevent the motor manifestations of Parkinson's disease. So we're looking very hard at predictive markers of Parkinson's disease in these REM sleep behavior disorder patients. We're doing a few other things as well. We're very interested in seeing what kind of Parkinson's disease and what kind of dementia do people get if they start with REM sleep behavior disorder. It looks like they don't get quite the typical Parkinson's disease. There's some differences, a little bit more cognitive impairment, a little bit more less response to medications. They don't tend to have tremor. They tend to have the other manifestations. So that's an area trying to understand the variability of Parkinson's disease. So we're looking at that as well.
Dr. Ronald Postuma is researcher in the neuroscience axis of the Research Institute of the McGill University Health Center. He's also a neurologist at the McGill University Health Center and assistant professor of neurology and neurosurgery in the Faculty of Medicine at McGill University and researcher at the Sacré-Cœur Hospital in Montreal. And Dr. Postuma, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss this relationship that you found and also the interesting leads that this will, in terms of research, progress to. And I would like to have you back on the air as this research continues to follow up on this.
Thank you, and I'd love to chat again.